This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to Your Next Episode with me, Louise.
And me, Amy.
So can we just start by addressing the new social distancing rules that legally come into place from Monday, the 14th of September, which is the day this episode's going out.
Yeah.
So do you understand them, Amy? Have you got any questions? Because I've actually done my research.
Are you like the oracle at this point?
I'm pretty much.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. I can barely keep my head around the emails that are coming from school about what shoes need to be worn and what equipment needs to be taken. Okay. So what's changed?
Right, okay. I mean, obviously, I should just sort of say, you know, obviously look up the proper actual guidelines.
Disclaimer, Louise does not know what the fuck she's talking about.
I do. Basically, you can't socialise in groups of more than six people indoors or outdoors unless you all live together or you're in a bubble. Now, I had forgotten what a bubble was, so a bubble is just for single people. So a single person can join a family of six, taking the total up to seven. That would be fine. Or vice versa. And they would be allowed to gather in your home or garden. But if there are six of you in your house, that's it. You can't get together with anyone else. So
three couples could go for dinner inside or outside a pub.
They could, as long as they haven't got any kids with them.
Right.
So,
okay.
You know, so my best friend and I were talking about, for example, there are five in her house. There's her husband, and three kids. If she wanted to invite Paul and I over, only one of us could join her and her family.
Right.
You know, unless I was just. But what I was wondering is, do you think you're allowed to? What if you shut the children in their bedrooms? You know, are you? Is that illegal? Is it false imprisonment?
Yeah. Because that then. What about? Yeah. Exactly. If you had somebody on a different floor.
Yeah. Don't let them out. Then surely then, but I don't know. That's where that's
and
a grey area.
How enforceable is that, really? I mean, that's the other thing, isn't it?
I mean, quite enforceable. You could just lock your kids in their bedroom.
No, I was going to say, how can they police what people are doing? How can they? Well, what would they knock on the door?
They'd knock on the door.
Or your nosy neighbour would.
Then? Have they got to have a search warrant?
Your nosy neighbour has got a number that they can call.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Someone's going to dob you in. And that then, so then you've got to weigh up. I mean, if you're locking people in rooms or garages or something, that's false imprisonment. And what occurred to me then is you've got to think about are you going to break the law that way or through the social distancing? Which one do you think you'd get more time for, I suppose, is what you've got to kind of weigh up. These are the questions.
At this point, I'm thinking the crime that's going to get me more time is the crime I'm going to do, because I just fancy some me time. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, just... Ideally, getting my meals brought to me through a hatch.
Yeah.
That would be fine.
Yeah,
no, I mean, in all
away.
Seriousness, hasn't this come about because of the raves? And that's how people... That's what's happening with the spike, isn't it?
And also, they're worried about all the kids going to university and having parties. So they're not really looking for people like you and me. We can probably have a couple of extra people in our house and get away with it. But, oh, that's terribly... I know that's
really,
really
irresponsible.
I'm not like, Jesus, no. And, you know... And I also, you know, I can't be the only one getting anxious about Christmas, because basically, so we should have 14 people for Christmas. So that would be really taking the piss. Obviously, I'm not going to do that if we've still got these.
Could you have them on two separate floors? You've got a little driveway. Could you set a little table up there under a gazebo?
Maybe. Or I was thinking of doing shifts.
Two sittings.
You know, why not? Just make life really hard.
Like the harvester, all you can eat.
Because otherwise, there's going to be five of us, like in our house, with my older kids coming home. So then, do I say to my mum and dad, "Well, just one of you can come"?
I mean, which one is your favourite?
Yeah, I mean, that's tricky, isn't it? Yeah, I'd have to think about that. Yeah, these are all things. But, yeah. But basically, I did just want to clear up, because if anyone's like me and was a bit muddled, you know, that's it, really. Six people, no more. Mm. Doesn't matter whether they're your family or what, you know, that's all you're allowed. So, but also I wanted to ask you about your week, because you've had a really big week. And yeah. I think, first of all, I don't think we've ever had a chance to explain to people that listen to the podcast what it is that you started doing a year ago in your early 40s, which is quite incredible.
Yeah.
I think. So would you?
So it wasn't a complete bolt out of the blue, pre-kids, you know, like, you remember BK? When, you know, when you just had your life. I was pursuing a career in acting, singing, performance. So I had an agent. I came down to London thinking that the streets were paved with gold, and found out pretty soon that wasn't the case. So, you know, a couple of auditions and terrible Me Too couch, director's couch moments later. Oh, that we could go into that. That would be a whole other tangent. That would be fun, wouldn't it, guys? So, yeah, obviously, like you're saying, we've got this whole thing, haven't we? You come up for air, your youngest kid goes into school full time, and I've been writing, and I've been doing little videos online, and writing some and doing performances. I just like getting dressed up and doing stupid things and acting and stuff. And but I started doing stand-up comedy about a year ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would mostly entail me getting on the train, you know, going into London, sort of doing 5 minutes and most of the time dying on my ass. And, you know, like if you do follow me on Instagram, we've been through it, haven't we? You know,
yeah.
I will sit in my car or on the train if it's gone badly, sometimes with a big Cornish pasty at like 11:30.
Yeah.
And people can tell just by the little bit of carrot hanging out the side of my mouth. Oh, shit, that didn't go well. And then I'll come out of a gig another time. And again, these are little open mic. It's not just the open mic circuit. It's the open mic circuit where you try stuff and it fails, and then you try something else and then it fails a bit less. And then, you know, and then eventually sort of getting to the point where I was kind of coming out of those gigs and going, oh my God, it worked. You know, that worked and it was good. And I've been booked to do something else. And it's been good. I mean, it's been knackering because obviously no matter how late I get that Stella Artois train out of London Bridge to Tunbridge Wells, this is pre-COVID, getting up for the school run the next morning, but just buzzing because just loving it.
But
and
you
just
really enjoyed it, because that would scare the. I can't think of anything worse than having to stand up and do that. But, you know, but then lockdown happened and everything, so that all stopped. And I know you were doing a lot of Zoom stuff. But this week you've gone back to
live
stand-up.
I've had a couple of sort of what felt like, you know, we've all had those moments, haven't we, either in our career or in relations or in life, where you feel like, oh, this is one of those big moments. In the words of RuPaul, don't fuck it up, you know. And I had a gig with and headlining the gig was friend of the show, Richard Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's a proper comedian, sort of paying his bills, you know, and established comedians. Mm. And whilst, you know, it's not like they're going to make a massive difference to my career, it's just sort of like, it's quite important that this doesn't turn into a Cornish pasty moment, Amy.
Yeah.
So keep it together. But obviously, I'd not done it live since fucking March. So just before I'm going on, I felt like I was going into labour.
Oh.
I was kind of like, I could hear my heart thudding in my ears. And I was like, shit. Like, the adrenaline, but not in a good way, you know, like Kylie probably feels before she goes on. You know, this is in a pub garden in East London. But do you know what? I just, you know, I was opening, and that's also quite a tricky slot. I do a character act, so you've kind of got to get on board with it within the first 7 seconds, or it's a long 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And thankfully, the stars aligned, I don't know, and it just clicked, and everyone loved the silliness of it. And just loved
fantastic.
It. And,
fantastic. And can I ask, when you do characters,
don't you?
And I did see recently on Instagram stories you were thinking about doing more observational stuff.
Yeah, as me.
As you. Because you really make me laugh when you're being, you know, your observational stuff.
Well,
really,
thank you.
Know, that you
but as you
funny.
Just said before, I couldn't, that scares the shit out of me.
Does it?
That does. So for me, I guess it is about sort of hiding behind that character, because it's like,
of course.
Oh, that must have been difficult.
Yeah.
Like, I separate. I've basically got like a Can I have professional bipolar where I'm just kind of like, that wasn't me. That must suck. Yeah. Are you all right?
And do you learn, do you have to have it all in your head, like the words, do you, because you know I've what I'm a, like, I can't even sit here and I have a discussion know. With you without my notes.
So, I've got a...
whereas you just sit there and chat and it's all just, you rely on your brain, which I can't do anymore.
This is why we make the perfect
team. I'm perimenopausal and you're not, so we've discussed that before. So.
No, I have recently said that I think I've got dementia because I sometimes just have these moments.
No, that's perimenopause. That's the start of it.
Oh, shit,
that's the start,
isn't it?
Yeah. That's the start of it, yeah. But anyway,
I sort of have a parameter. So within that character, I know that, you know, if I'm doing a little bit of work with somebody in the audience, as in work, oh, God, that sounds so wanky, but I'm going to go up to them and interact with them and we're going to go off script now.
Oh.
Yeah, but that's... like for me in that character, yeah. I love that because that's when the funny bits come. Now, obviously, right. if that, you never know what that's going to be. And I'm sitting here like I'm, you know, I don't know, a veteran comedian or something. I've literally been doing it for a year in the real life and then 6 months on Zoom, which is a different muscle and skill altogether. It's sort of like if we run into a cul-de-sac, me and this audience member, I know that I can get back to what I was saying because I've got a little route in my character to get back to what I'm doing. God. But sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, you know. And
it's making me tense just imagining doing it. I would just be...
I wouldn't have been able to have this conversation with you, like... before this gig because sometimes it's like you're on the tightrope. If you really think about how the tightrope works and how high it is and what foot placement it's just like don't analyze it too much, but it is, you know, I'm loving it and I'm in a very, you know, I'm so fortunate that I've got my mum who and Dan, my husband, is working at home at the moment, but everybody helps me. Everyone's just sort of putting together to help Amy not have another brain down.
No,
I'm laughing. But it's really not that far from the truth.
Of course.
No, it's not. I think it's just like we all, you know, when you have your kids and you raise them and you do that bit and then they sort of don't need you that much anymore. And it's kind of like, oh, what's going to happen now? What are you doing now? And I will get a proper job at some point. But at the moment, I'm enjoying writing something. And as you said, you talk about not shitting on your own doorstep. I did a beautiful turd on my own doorstep last night, as in it went really well. And
good.
I did a gig a mile down the road.
It's just like you've had like months of not being able to do it, and then suddenly you're two nights running, you've got to go and throw yourself into that. And that went really well last night.
It was just I think again it was sort of like home turf. I did the thing that was out of my comfort zone, which is getting up as me and welcoming everyone and thanking them for buying tickets and coming and hoping that everyone felt safe and comfortable. But we're out and we've got matching shoes on. just that energy from everybody. I think everyone was well up for it. And the local venue to here, which is just stunning. It's beautiful. It's outside. It's like an amphitheatre. And so it all just came together.
Well, I've heard great things about it from
other
people. Yeah. So this would lead us quite nicely into introducing our guest for this week. Mm. Just that sort of, you know, that you decided, you know, to pursue your dream, to go, right, what do I need to do to make this happen? You know, what's the path I need to take? And, you know.
Yeah, and being aligned as well. We were talking about alignment, weren't we? You know, and just sort of like, evolving.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So our guest this week is someone I originally came across through my... with my other hat on as a birth worker about 12 years ago, because I'm an antenatal teacher and a doula. And her name is Mars Lord, and she is an award-winning doula, a birth worker, educator and activist. And I've seen her speak many times, and every single time I've come away I like, it's a real treat to hear her speaking about anything, pretty much. But obviously, because she's mainly, up until now, her work has been around birth, that hasn't been relevant to midlife as such, although I know, you know, some women in midlife are having babies, but I didn't feel that I could actually really shoehorn her in. So anyway, there was a month or so ago where she said on her Instagram account she was making an announcement, and I don't know why I had something in my head. I had a suspicion that it was going to be announcing that she is going to be doing coaching and using her years of experience.
And such a great translation of her skills from what she was interested in before.
Absolutely.
Into what she's interested
in now. Absolutely, yeah. So she's 54 now. She's a mother of five and a grandmother too. And as I say, she's someone, you know, if you hear her speak, when you in the audience, there are always massive sort of light bulb moments. And you know that you're going to learn something, and I was very excited to hear. I was sort of watching, waiting for the announcement that she's branching out into coaching, because that gave me a legitimate reason to ask her onto this midlife podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome, Mars Lord.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for coming. As I said, I've only ever known of Mars through birth work, and so I was very excited to hear that she's branching out or expanding on what she does into coaching now, because that gave me a legitimate reason to ask her if she'd be on this midlife podcast. Mars, you're 54, is that correct?
53.
Oh, God,
but no,
sorry.
That's fine, because actually it's normally me that adds a year to my age, and I have absolutely no problem being my age, except for when I'm halfway down the stairs and I go, 53.
Okay, so Mars is 53. She's a mother of five, and now a grandmother too. So how old is your grandson? About 10 months?
He turned 10 months last week. He is a ball of fat, nibbling joy who has really, really come into his personality in the last couple of weeks.
Oh,
including
wonderful.
Pushing your arm away when he doesn't want to be cuddled and demanding your arm is pulled back when he does.
And how was it over? Were you not able to see him during lockdown?
No,
they don't live with you.
No, it was a lot of video chat. And so, but what's been good about that is the habit that it's created within my daughter. So I get my video chats with him every day.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good.
But yes, the first thing I did when we were allowed to see people was go and grab that bundle of fatness. And I'm sure my daughter has a name, but I've long forgotten it because Raphael is the only one that I care about.
Oh, that's so accurate. I'm sure so many people are listening going, that's exactly what happened.
Just to carry on introducing you a bit, Mars, you're someone who, you know, when you speak or write, I feel that there are light bulb moments always for your audience, in abundance. So, personally, if I sit down and listen to you or read something that you've written, you know, I know I'm going to learn something and I know I'm going to enjoy it well as well. You're a great speaker.
Thank you.
You're very funny, very wise, knowledgeable. But and before we talk about your new venture, can you just tell us a bit about your background?
So you've already told everyone that I'm a mother of five. We stopped at two, yeah. Third ignored the contraception. We thought we'd have one more whilst on holiday, came home the next day, decided maybe not, and it was twins. So I know, but I mean, it is lovely having all of them. But when the twins were little, I went to a coffee morning, which I hate, but I just wanted to have a cup of tea in peace. And I knew that people would hold the babies. So I handed over the babies and overheard a conversation about doulas. I found it quite fascinating. And I went off and did a bit of research. And then I did a course and decided that doulaing was for me, even though the last thing in my mind was to be working with mums and babies. And I just fell completely and passionately in love with it. And the more I did it, then I realised that as a twin mum, that twin mums needed more support. Yeah. So I started to specialise in that. But I kept looking around and I couldn't find other black and brown doulas. And I couldn't see black and brown women being supported by doulas. And that was just something that I really, really wanted to develop up and specialise in. Which brings me to where I am today, where I do a lot of birth activism and reproductive justice, because some may have heard the statistics, but black women are five times more likely to die in the perinatal period than white women in the West. Mm. So it's not something that happens over there. It happens here in the UK. Yeah. And so that moved me naturally on to training doulas, particularly black and brown doulas. But I do train white doulas as well. And I find that when they come out at the end of my training, they're all birth activists and they're all really keen for reproductive justice. And so I feel like what abuela doulas, and abuela is Spanish for grandmother, because I believe in bringing the wisdom of the grandmother forward to modern birth. But when they come out of abuela doula training, you know, they should be able to work with anyone, with any group, and be inclusive. And a lot of people say, well, I'm sure all doulas do that, but actually they don't, because particularly in light of the recent social conscious awakening movement, people are beginning to say, oh, there are things that are happening that we're not aware of.
So can you just embellish on that a little bit? Why black doulas for black mothers? Why is that important? I mean, I think I probably understand, but people might not understand
because
why.
Because representation matters. Because if you have a black doula and you feel or see that your healthcare professional is treating you badly and making assumptions about you because of the colour of your skin, because of your ethnicity, the doula that looks like you isn't going to brush it off and say, no, no, not black women, all women, which I've heard so many times over the years by so many people who it surprised me that they're the ones who've said it. And it doesn't mean that black and brown people can't be cared for by white doulas, but no one raises an eyebrow when a French woman wants a French doula or a Russian woman wants a Russian doula. The eyebrows only go up when black people say, well, actually, I want a black doula. And I think my best personal experience of it was when I was having my third baby and she was just about to be born, and I just went into that space of complete panic. And it was a Jamaican midwife, and she said to me, you just need to trust me. Breed your baby out. And it sounded like my mum. And I was completely at home and safe and in a place of trust. And I breathed and my baby came out. Because I was represented in that room. My mother, in many ways, was in that room. My cultural heritage was in that room. So it was really, I just felt really safe. And when I work with black and brown clients, I've seen the way that they've been treated. I've heard the way that they've been treated prior to my arriving at their side. And just recently I had a lovely Asian woman with her white husband, and he sent me a message. This was the literally 3 hours after I got home from the birth, asking me to come back to the hospital. He said he couldn't. I had to read the email because he couldn't say it out loud. I read the email, and the midwife who had been there booking in midwife was the midwife in charge of looking after them that day, and that she had been incredibly racist and treating his wife incredibly badly. And they wanted me to come back and spend the day so that, one, I could bear witness, and two, they knew that I would mitigate that. And by the end of the day, her treatment had improved so dramatically. People were coming into her room and speaking down to her. And by the time they left the room, they were speaking to her like she was, for want of a better phrase, a normal human being.
I mean, the thing is, I'm just thinking about in that moment when you do go into labour and you go in, and I'm thinking about the whole gaslighting thing that goes on. And actually, without somebody there to say, no, this is what's happening, that gaslighting sort of risk is so much more, because you don't know what you're doing. You don't have clarity of thought when you're in so much pain, do you?
Exactly. And if you're, and people say, well, you've got a partner with you. But if it's your first time on the journey, how does your partner know that you're being gaslit? How does your partner know that actually you have choices? There are things that you can decline, that you can ask questions, and you shouldn't be shot down for asking questions because you want to make informed decisions.
It's okay, we could do a whole podcast just about this subject, couldn't we? I mean, there's so much there. Two white women doing that probably wouldn't be the best thing, but I'm just, it's such a massive, deep subject, isn't it? I mean, I guess lockdown in all of its manifestations has been a time for thought and reflection, and I know that it has been for you particularly, Mars. Could you talk us through sort of those times and the understanding for you that has come out of this time, and I guess led on to the coaching decision, has it?
Yeah, it has. It was really strange. I mean, I think I read somewhere that Generation X, that's us, were built for lockdown, because actually I've really kind of enjoyed it, the slower pace and the chilling out a bit more. You know, the restrictions to where I can and can't go, not so much, but the, you know, the slowing down and the slowing of the pace. But at the very beginning, I had a couple of clients who were due to have babies. And of course, the immediate response from the hospitals were, no one can come in except for the person who's giving birth, which, you know, touching very briefly back on where we were, has led to some more hidden abuses. But so my first client, I wasn't allowed to go in with them. So I supported them virtually, constantly on the phone, text, etc., supporting them through that. Then the second couple, I was allowed to go in, but on the day there was a change of mind and I wasn't allowed to go in. So again, I had to support them virtually. And it was just the time that I spent talking to them prior to this, making sure that they were prepared for if I wasn't allowed to come in, how to get them and their partners sorted. So a lot of that was going on at the very beginning. And because I train doulas, I suddenly realised that I would have to cancel all my trainings because we wouldn't be able to meet face to face. So I think I spent the first month and a half, 2 months of lockdown, not talking to a lot of people, putting my head down and just getting my courses online. And whilst I was doing that, I started to think about what lockdown meant for me personally, and what did it mean for the way that I work and the way that I wanted to work going forward. And I found that I've really enjoyed having my courses online. I do miss the face-to-face. I love people. I love, I'm quite tactile. So, you know, it's a bit strange to not be able to touch people. But the online courses have been going well because we've still managed to build up the same rapport, etc. But moving forward, I kept thinking, what do I do now? And then I just thought, well, I'm perimenopausal, so my memory's a little bit shot from time to time. And actually, do I really want to be menopausing on a hospital floor whilst my client is, you know, getting ready to give birth. So there I am, sort of, and this is all in my imagination. So there I am, and my client is saying, "I'm not sure I can do this." And there I am, sort of fanning myself, going, "That's all right for you." But I'm about to explode in a ball of heat, you know. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, actually, do you know what? I need to think about what I'm doing, because actually I'm training these incredible group of doulas who come at it with a fresh energy, mm-hmm. and, you know, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll just do less births. Yeah. But what lockdown did, so normally if I don't do a birth for even a few weeks, I get a bit antsy, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh, come on, you know,
yeah.
I've got this big gap. Why have I got a big gap? I need, you know, to be working in the world of birth some more. And I realised that I was missing it less, because yeah. I was really enjoying the change of pace. But yeah. I wasn't missing it, because I was talking to these fabulous people who were coming through the training and talking about their hopes and their dreams and their plans for doulaing. And I'm mm-hmm. helping them to just solidify their thoughts, clarify their direction.
Yeah,
you know, and I kept thinking, I really enjoy this bit.
Whenever I've heard you speak, and I've seen you in person at various things, last March was the last one at the Let's Talk Birth conference. And then I've obviously watched you on, you know, online speaking as well. So, but and actually, when I was saying earlier about, I always know I'm going to learn something, and often I would say it's not just learning about facts, although that does happen. But I think you have a way about you where you kind of get people to go away and be considering things in a different way. So maybe they're learning a bit about themselves too, these doulas. Yeah. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just realised that I really enjoy that bit.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I've been doing this for years, you know, whether it... Even before I was training doulas, when I was mentoring doulas, and even before I was mentoring doulas, because before I became an official mentor with the doula organisation that I used to belong to, I was mentoring people, you know, just...
Anyway.
Yeah. You know, I would often get a phone call.
Because it's what comes naturally to
you.
Yes. So, yeah.
And so what lockdown did was make me start to think about... What things do I want to be doing in sort of as I move towards a retirement or whatever a retirement looks like? And what's going to allow me to spend more time with that fat ball of flesh?
Yes.
Yeah, priorities change, don't they? Yeah. I guess.
They do.
They do.
And when you're a doula, you know, you have to be within 90 minutes of your client. Yeah. You have to sort of block off 4 or 5 weeks in your diary where there are things that you can't do, there are places that you can't go, because if you go, then you're not going to be in easy reach of your client, or you'll be in the middle of doing something and then the call comes to go to a birth. And I want to be able to, you know, say, yeah, I'll spend 2 days with Rafi this week. Him and I can hang out without calling my daughter back and saying, yeah, really can't do it, actually. I've got to run to a birth.
No.
And it's not because I don't love the birth work. And it's not because that isn't wonderful stuff, because it really is. But actually, I've trained so many people that can be doing it that me stepping back isn't a hardship. And I had to sit with that and think, well, how does that make me feel? Because I've been a doula for over 15 years and it wasn't a career I looked for, but it was one that I loved immediately that it started. And for a long time, I couldn't imagine. I used to say to people, I'll do my last birth and then they'll just wheel me down to the morgue.
Well, it sounds like you had a calling, Mars, but now it looks like you've had a calling to do something else. And as you were saying, I guess when you just take out the very specifics of the birthing fact, but then you have this all-encompassing kind of mentoring approach, you are able to kind of pivot slightly into coaching. So who is your coaching for, would you say? Is it for anyone doing anything, or is it more targeted?
I think my coaching is mainly for women. Mm-hmm. Women that sort of see the glass ceiling, or if you're black, the concrete ceiling, and, that just maybe like me are redefining where they are and who they are, or people mm-hmm. that have come to a stage in their work or their business and they don't know how to just push through mm-hmm. to the next stage. So it's not that they're standing still and it's stagnant, but they're not free flowing either. Mm. And so it's for people to just say, okay, let's find a way to get you to look at where you are and decide where you want to be.
When I heard that you were going to be offering coaching, beyond the birth world, I think I'd heard you say it on an Instagram live, and then saw that you were waiting to announce something, and I was thinking, I bet it's going to be some sort of, coaching, and I just thought, that will be good, that will be worth doing, it will be amazing, because I think I know enough about you to know that what, you're going to be doing will probably be life-changing for people.
Years ago, someone had suggested to me that I'd make an excellent life coach, and I remember laughing and I just said, yeah, whatever. And my mother has always said to me, you have a lot of knowledge and you like to share it. And so, and she's convinced that they'll bury me talking. I remember telling a midwife that once, and it went right over her head. She said, no, but you'll be dead. I just thought,
one of my audience members.
Yeah, you're not my target audience.
No,
yeah.
Absolutely.
and I have watched people. I have watched people come into the birth world and make a quick buck in the birth world. People that don't really know the birth world, don't really know how it works, the ins and out of birth, etc. But they've made some money there. And then they've targeted an audience. And then once that audience has been saturated with them, then they go off and they move and they do something else. And I keep thinking to myself, or kept thinking, God, Emperor's New Clothes or what? Mm. And mm. I don't know, maybe part of that was my own sense of, well, I could do that better. And who do I think I am to be some kind of life coach when this is what a life coach looks like? And this is nothing that I want to look like. This is the antithesis of what I would want to be. So I've watched people come in, and I've watched these tiny microscopic changes, and then I've watched everything go back to what it was before, and people with empty pockets. So I've always been a bit skeptical, but then I'm a black woman, and we are taught without being taught that you don't go to a therapist, you don't talk to people about things, you get on with your own business, which is probably one of the reasons why we have such high rates of, just only one of the reasons though, of poor mental health. So the skeptic in me was always there, until I realized that a friend of mine who had become a coach had started gently coaching me. And I said to her, excellent, you're quite good at this, aren't you? Because I'm quite stubborn and a bit rebellious. I remember a family member telling me when I was younger, you should become a lawyer. And I'd wanted to be a lawyer or a teacher. And as soon as he said that, that was it. That was it. And that was the end of that.
So was your friend sort of sneakily coaching you? Because she knew that if she said, why don't I give you some coaching, you'd say to her,
possibly.
Piss off.
She was,
psychology.
Yeah. We were just, we were really good friends, and we would sit and we would chat, and she would start to ask me why I was thinking something, or what those thoughts were making me do, and why I was walking in different directions. And then before I knew it, I would have sort of outlined a few things and then said, actually, no, that's not what I want. She's like, right, okay. And I'm like, yeah. Oh. But at the beginning, I thought, what a great friend. And then during lockdown, she said to me, so this has been going on for a fair wee while, and then I watched her coaching practice grow, and I realized that of course there are those with the Emperor's New Clothes, but they're just the flashy ones at the front And behind them are the ones who are actually doing the work and the ones who are seeing people's lives transformed.
Yeah.
And I thought, I could do that. And then she said to me, I don't even remember what we were chatting about. And she suddenly said, you're really enjoying this training, aren't you? I said, oh, God, I love it. Lights me up. And she said, yeah, you know you're a coach. What? You know you're a coach. I said, oh, don't be ridiculous. And she said, you're a coach, Mars. How does that make you feel? I went, oh, don't be silly, because it's all... Well, actually.
But it's what you've been doing, isn't
exactly.
it?
Do you know
what
I
mean? It's not like you suddenly went, oh, I fancy doing that.
It's the same skill set, isn't it?
It's just, yeah, and it's just evolved organically into this
yes.
now. Yeah.
So. And so she started this train of thought inside of me. And then I said to her, now, look, Maisie, what I need to do is, she said, why do you need to do those things? And she said, well, you know, if I'm going to become a coach, what I need to do is, and I started listing all of these things. She said, why do you need to do those things? And I said, well, because, oh, and then I started breaking them down while she sat and listened. And I just said, oh, actually, I don't know. And then we came to the place where I suddenly said, because I'm so used to people needing certificates. I'm so used to people needing to,
evidence almost.
Yes,
yeah.
to get the receipts of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then she said, and when you started your doula training doulas, what did you do? And I said, well, I'd already left the doula organisation that I belonged to because I didn't feel safe there as a black woman. I knew I would be training black and brown people particularly, so I didn't want them in an organisation where they didn't feel safe. So I went and did it anyway. And she said, and where are your certificates?
I know. Well, you're absolutely right. Yes, of course. You know, when I started being a doula, I was with the same organisation and had my and thought that I needed to have that certificate. And but after a while, very quickly realised I didn't need to be paying an annual fee to.
Yeah, like, is the certificate
for what?
Thing just a racket? Is that what
think,
that is? Like,
I don't. I think it could be.
Well, it
depends, doesn't it? But actually. Yeah, you don't need certificates and things now. You've proved, you know, people, you've got a backlog of, I don't know, what you know, experience.
Yeah. And, you know, and I just thought, you're so right. And at no stage did any of my clients ever ask me
so let's see
a certificate or for my CV. One of the things that I do when I'm training the doulas is I say, look, go and look at some other doula sites and tell me what you like and don't like about them. And then they all come and say... So I must make sure that I've got a page that lists all my training. And I'm like, do you honestly think a pregnant woman cares about that?
Yeah.
And they said, what? And I mean, who are you writing it down for? Are you writing this down for their benefit or for yours?
For your own.
So that you can tick your list. And the more because Maisie had put this bloody idea in my head, I started listening to what I was saying to the people that I was mentoring, and they're not all doulas because people had started approaching me from different places. I've got a couple of actresses
of
that I mentor. Yeah. And I suddenly thought, wait, that's what I'm doing, looking to list my CV to say, please like me, please like me, please like me. And yet when I first created my website, my original web designer, she said to me, Mars, the problem with your website is this, because I'd given her all the copy. She said, I love the images, etc. She said, but it really reads like you're choosing your clients. And I said, yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. And so I knew that whenever someone booked me or whenever someone inquired to book me, there was a 90 to 95% chance they were going to book me. And the only thing that would prevent them from booking me would be the money. Because my website said who I was. I said who I was, you know. Mm. And so I would get emails saying, dear Mars, I love red wine. I love the theatre. I'm always thinking outside of the box. And, you know, and it's, and it really was a pick me, pick me. And I thought, yeah. So with Maisie saying this to me, you're a coach.
Is this Maisie Hill?
Yes.
Yes, right. Okay.
You really should talk to her. But what she'd done was, so one of the things that she does in her work is she tells you to harness your hormones and use your cycle and to, you know, to look at the best places, best points in your cycle in which to make decisions. And her one of her favourite phrases, you just need to bleed on it. So as you're having your bleed, you're just releasing things and you're just, and these ideas are flowing, etc. So I just, you know, I spent a little bit of time, and to those that are like, she said what? Honestly, it works. And so I just, all of these memories, things that I did, that I was doing, people that I was talking to, changes that I'd seen in people's lives, in their businesses, I went, oh. And then that was it. And so before I could stop myself, I posted, I'm going to make an announcement soon about my pivot. And I did
that.
And
once you do that, once you do that, you know that it's it, like you have to follow through then.
Yes.
Once you've committed on social media.
Yeah. And it just made me really excited.
Yeah.
And, you know, then the next time I spoke to her afterwards, she said, how are you feeling? And I said, I'm feeling really excited because it feels like this is where the roads have been leading.
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
You know, and we've got those stages in our lives. So, you know, the traditional stages, there's maiden, mother, crone. So I'd been maiden and then I'd had my children and become mother. And for those that are child-free by choice, there are other ways to mother that might not look like mothering. And then there's the next stage, which is crone, the wise woman. And we get frightened of the word crone because, you know, the patriarchy have
has
really done a number on what women together are and made it sound like a nasty, evil thing. And I was talking to my other best birth buddy, because Maisie was a doula when we first met.
Yes, yes.
Nicola Goodall, who runs Red Tent Doulas. And I said to her, I think I'm coming to the end of attending births. And if any of my previous clients are listening who are still planning on that one more baby, don't worry. You're not in that list. You're covered. And I said to her, I really feel I'm coming to the end of that. And she said, well, that's because you're embracing your crone. You're now fully ready to step into wise woman and teacher. And I am. And it just feels like it's exactly where I'm supposed to be.
You know, and I think here you are, you're 53, you've started something new and it's evolved organically. You are completely aligned with your purpose. Yeah. And it seems like a really stupid question, but like, how is midlife for you? Are you loving it?
Well,
some of it, right?
No,
all of it.
It's like, I'm a black woman. I don't look 53.
No.
So people are constantly telling me, are you sure? And I'm like, well, if I do the maths, then yes. But, you know, I
see
it's
Mars.
Yes, absolutely.
That's and I'm like,
and I say, well, I said, you know, I feel 27. And they're like, so what are you going to do when your son hits 27? Well, he's 27 and he's 28 in December, which means my son's going to be older than me in December. And I'm not quite sure how that works. And as I said to you earlier, I'm halfway down the stairs. And I'm like, 53? How the fuck did I get to 53? Because I don't feel 53. I'm enjoying the vast majority of it because I've never worried about age and numbers. I've always celebrated. I think I'm still celebrating turning 50 because I do think the decades deserve a decade worth of celebration, you know. And I've watched friends that have sort of cried when they left their teens, cried when they left their 20s. Yeah. And I'm like, why are you crying when everything that we... I remember talking to a friend on a tube once and we were sat there and we were looking at some young people larking around and we said... Oh, bless them. There's so much about sex they still haven't discovered.
I would not go back there. I would not go back to being in my 20s or 30s. No way.
And it's like with every, you know, passing year or decade, I mean, the fact that A, we're still here at this age when it wasn't that long ago when the menopause was pretty much the end of a woman's life, you know, and she didn't progress much further than that before dying. But I don't know, it feels like the world is so much more open to us, particularly as women, to be older, because we haven't been allowed to be older. And because we haven't been allowed to be older, we have resented getting older because everyone looks for the fresh young thing. But when you embrace your crone, the wise woman, the teacher, you're like, but of course that's where I want to be, the wise woman, the teacher, the one that has all these young people sat at their feet saying,
yeah,
teach me, how do I get to that place? I have many intergenerational friendships. A couple of my most favourite and closest friends are in their early 20s,
yeah,
you know,
right.
And I laugh at them all the time. I think, oh, we did an online pub quiz, a pub quiz, for goodness sake. We did an online pub quiz because they really wanted to do this. And they were like, oh, my God, you're getting all of these answers right. I'm like, it's the 80s, mate. It's just the 80s. And they're like, and they're looking at me like, the what? And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, I did so much. I was married and I started having children before you were born,
yeah,
you know.
Of course.
And but it's just lovely. So I've been finding it. I don't know. I just like it. And I think it's maybe the evolving, allowing myself to evolve.
Yeah. Have you had that that thing where you're just sort of less concerned about being, about tolerating poor behaviour from others or staying quiet when you see it?
So my current catchphrase, I say current catchphrase, it's been my phrase for a while. I think it started at 40, actually. Is I'm 50 and fuck it.
Yes.
So I just, I mean, look, the work that I do, you know, I'm still going to do the birth activism even as I'm doing the coaching, is I'm talking to groups of people about what it means to be black in the maternity system, what it means to be at a 5 times higher risk of death in the perinatal period. And someone says to me, you're really quite blunt, aren't you? Because I realise that I sort of start my conversations and say, listen, I don't have time for white fragility and white discomfort and centering and saviourism, etc.
Yes.
Because black women are dying. And you've got two choices. Step up and stand or sit down and get the fuck out of the way. You know, and like, the first time I said it, I was like, oh, that was nice. Oh, yes. Beautifully liberating to simply just say what it was that I was thinking and feeling in that moment. And actually that made the most impact. Because people were saying, well, I'm not racist at all. I said, I'm not interested in your non-racism because non-racism simply means you can swim in a pool of racism and say, but I'm all right because I'm not. But anti-racism makes you get out of that pool and turn to the pool and do something to change that water.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And so anti-racism is a movable, evolving thing. And I feel that that's how I am. Oh, Jill Scott, I think it is, one of my favourite singers, sings, or maybe it's India Irie, sings, life isn't the destination, it's the journey.
Yeah.
And actually, it's true, because the destination is dead. So,
and life is that.
You know, the two things we all have in common, birth, death, you know, and just the moving along. And actually, I read years ago, The Secret History of Tractors in the Ukraine or something.
Oh, yes.
And the Ukrainian wife sort of turns to her husband and says something like, man grow old and die in chair, you know. And I thought, I don't want to be grow old and die in chair.
No.
I want to keep moving and doing things. And I don't have time or the energy to envy people who are in their 20s and 30s because I've been there and I've done that and I enjoyed that. But fucking hell, 50's great. You know, and then I've got friends in their 60s who are like, oh, if you think 50's good, I'm like, oh my God. God.
Oh, really? Oh, marvellous. Oh, God.
Because like me, they're not man grow old and die in chair.
No, no.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And so they're still doing things. And it was a couple of years ago that I realised why my older friends had suddenly turned to herbalists and things. Because actually they suddenly went, do you know, this isn't about being skinny. This isn't about being the perfect this or whatever.
Yeah, no.
This is about making sure that I look after this temple because I'm a bloody goddess.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and I'm like, absolutely. Oh. Yeah. So now I'm like, oh, let me just have a little look at these herbs and things. Because I knew, because in my mind it's like, but that's a bit old though. But now it's like, that's not old.
Now you're burning sage.
It's not old, it's yes. wise.
I am.
Excellent.
I'm wearing my rose quartz crystal, you know. But I just keep thinking there's so much more of life to be doing and to be living. And I kind of made the decision that I'm not actually going to die till I'm 108.
Oh, good.
And what I'm going to, so I'm, you know, not even quite halfway there yet. And what I'm going to do is have a huge birthday party on the night before my 108th birthday, you know, and I'll probably be in a chair rocking a hip or something. And it'll be a birthday party come living funeral. And then I'm going to go upstairs after midnight, and I'm going to wake up dead. That's what I've decided. Yes. That's the plan. Oh. That's the plan.
Good to have a plan. Good to have a plan.
It's good to have a plan. Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, but to get there, I need to be living, and I really do love people, and I do really love women, and seeing them grow and evolve and change, and I see, and I know because of my own experience as a black woman. I know how much society tries to hold me back as a woman. Mm-hmm. I know how they work even harder to hold me back because I'm black. I know that white women, when they say women, mean white women. Mm-hmm. When they say feminism, they mean white feminism. And they don't see the intersectionality. Or they say, no, it's not about black, it's about women. And it's like, if you silence the black woman's voice, then you're not speaking for all women.
Well,
you're
that's
just
the equivalent of all
subset.
Lives matter, isn't it? That is the
exactly.
equivalent of all lives matter. I mean, again, like so much anti-racism education I've had over the last sort of 6 weeks or so, and the tone policing and microaggressions, and you know, I've reached this age of being 42 and just not really understood it in the way that I do now, and therefore be able to call it out and be able to have the vocabulary and the understanding to know what's going on.
Exactly. And realising that these aren't changes that we could all make instantly. And people say to me, yeah, but what if I get it wrong? And I'm like, well, so what if you get bloody wrong? Everybody gets everything wrong. But all it's done, all of this work has done, all of this thoughts, we make mistakes and people go, oh, I'm afraid to make a mistake. And it's like, but we learn in the mistakes. And what I've said to people for years is, you have a choice. Is this going to be your stumbling block or your stepping stone?
Brilliant.
Are you going to fall over it, or are you going to stand on it and just launch yourself into the next bit? And that's why coaching makes sense to me. So having Maisie now officially as my coach, and having one other coach to just talk and think about the things that I'm doing and why I want to do them and how to make them a reality. And to me, it's not about making tons and tons of money, though of course making tons and tons of money, no one could really complain about that, but it's about it's about watching transformation. It's about learning from my own transformation, the way that I'm actually able to embrace being 53 and not being frightened of the fact that in a few months I'll be 54, you know, and embracing the fact that my perimenopause is leading me towards menopause and to the wonderful life afterwards, you know, and planning to wake up dead on my 108th birthday, things like that. You know, it's just, I don't know, it just makes my soul come alive thinking about talking with people. I've got one client who says to me, the thing is, Mars, what you've done is you talk to my little inner voice, and you're its champion and you're its cheerleader, and you keep bringing it to the front so that I'm starting to make the decisions that I've always wanted to make, do the things that I've always wanted to do, because that little voice has you behind it as its champion, who's
you're
not afraid
to... You're on the volume switch. You're turning it right up.
Absolutely. And, you know, and she said, and you're there just telling it sometimes to think about itself. Go sit down and take a minute and think about yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now let's move forward, you know. And that was a really lovely compliment that she said
that. Wonderful. So to find out more about, so it's one-to-one support, is it online at the moment or face-to-face? How does it?
So at the moment it's online.
Yes.
It's online. Yeah. And, and there are two ways that I'm coaching. I'm doing one-to-one coaching, and the one-to-one coaching is, at this moment, is specifically for Black women who have reached a place and want to move just a little further forward. And they get into a, or more than a little way forward, and they go into a closed group where they can be with other Black women. So they're in a nice safe space where they can talk about how they're feeling and why, and give each other peer support. And then the other offering that I have is group coaching, and that's very much a mixed group, and it's a monthly thing, again with a closed forum where they can give each other peer support, and we can talk through issues and challenges, etc., and they get a monthly coaching call. And that's where I've sort of started, because you know, my passion really is that, I think it was Angela Davis once said, I saw her at the South Bank, the WOW Festival, and she said, white women are bothered and worried about the glass ceiling when Black women don't even know if the floor beneath them is stable. And so that's where I want to start. I want to start with those women, because did you know, I think it's 47% of entrepreneurs are Black women.
Wow. No.
We are the largest group. Yeah. Of entrepreneurs. So women are the largest group of entrepreneurs, but 47% as Black women. And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's funny you should say it, because I've started following Black Pound Day on Instagram.
Yes.
And actually, you know, the next Black Pound Day is on the 1st of August. And I'm, I mean, not that I wouldn't spend money with Black businesses until then, but I've noticed everyone's getting themselves ready to do that. And I'm researching the stuff that I need, because it, you know, again, this is sort of a blanket thing of like, I go on Amazon and I order something because I need it, and I feel dirty,
absolutely.
I feel ashamed, I feel guilty.
But it comes by 9 o'clock and you kind of...
Literally there.
Yeah.
So that's my own stuff that I need to deal with. I might have to work through that. I might actually need coaching and therapy through that. But no, just with a little bit more of research and a little bit more organisation and a bit of time, which you've got between now and then, and you look at these businesses... And they are majority women owned, Black businesses that are women owned. And so, they need the support and the...
It's just about being conscious, even if you own... Yeah. So I've seen lots of sort of backlash. Well, if you do that, what will happen to the rest of the economy? It's like, how short-sighted do you have to be not to see that by spending your money here, one, it enriches a community, but what do that community do with their riches? They spend it.
Spend it, yeah. Mm. It,
and so
that,
the whole
it is that
economy...
One thing, isn't it? Yeah, sorry, Mars.
No. I mean, you need to interrupt me, otherwise, you know, people say, and thank you for tuning into the Mars show. We're hoping she allows us to speak next time.
Not at all. Oh, but, you know, thank you ever so much for, you know, coming on today and, you know, and you know, giving us your time.
Absolutely.
And...
It's been so nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, and to you. I feel like we've just started.
I know. That is the annoying thing.
Regular contributor spot,
yes, absolutely.
I think.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, we're going through a change. I hope we're going through a change in society and in our consciousness. And of course, there's going to be a lot of backlash to that and people throwing around slogans and phrases and saying, oh, it's all just a political this, that. But there's hardly anything in life that isn't political, frankly. Mm. And being a Black woman is an act of political warfare as it is. But I just think, rather than thinking about this as a moment in time, we do need to think of it as a movement. Mm-hmm. And it's and movements are no good if they get static, if we only sort of do the one thing. So I really love that you're already looking ahead and doing research. What am I going to do on Black Pound Day? But it's that, and it's everything else. It's the how do we keep moving forward as a people? I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say do these things and we'll have world peace, because I'm not an idiot. Yeah, it'd be nice if I went to bed on my 108th birthday and it was there. Yes. You know, otherwise I might have to stay alive a little bit longer and sort it out. But you know, I think it's all of this is about movement. For me, the coaching work, the being with people, it's all about movement. Where are you now? How do you improve on that? Deepen that? How do you become the you you want to be? And you, and I love that phrase that you used earlier. How do you turn up the volume on you? Mm-hmm. You know, because I think that's so important. And I just think if we recognise that we're all going to fall over and stumble, but we help each other up, or we hold our hands up and go, yeah, crap mistake, sorry. Mm-hmm. Saw it as I did it, or oh my goodness, I didn't even see it. Thank you for letting me know. Here is my change. Yeah. Then I think we'll do okay.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Oh, I've had so much fun. If we do this again, though, could we do it in the evening so I can legitimately sit with a glass of red as we talk?
Absolutely, absolutely.
I'm at that point in the conversation where I'm like, oh, I could just murder.
Just,
oh, wait,
it's pour
it's,
a glass
it's not quite
now.
11 a.m.
No.
Oh, that was good, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Oh, I love that. Mm. She's so articulate and so, like, inspiring.
Yeah, indeed.
And I'm also excited about next week because we've got Dr. Leah Lease, haven't we?
Uh-huh. So she's...
Don't say that we don't do anything for you. you're getting bang for your buck on this
Absolutely.
One, aren't you?
So if anybody has... young children or teenagers, this is a really good episode for you because it's all about talking with your children about sex and relationships, self-confidence. Mm. And if it's something that, you know, you feel a little bit awkward about, next week's episode is really going to give you a bit of a heads up and understanding why it's really important that you don't just bury your head in the sand.
Yeah. So. As always, like, share, comment, subscribe.
Yes,
and
do
if you,
that, please.
Yeah, if you've got any anything you want to hear us gas on about, get in touch.
Yeah, all of our details are in the show notes, so you can get in touch with either of us there.
Bye.
Bye.
Produced by Louise Daniels. Visit louise-daniels.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.